Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 45. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
And Josh.
And this is going to be the week where I guess we let our geek rage fly, I suppose. I guess that's what it's going to be. I don't know. Anyway, before we get to that, let's just talk about what we watched this week. Did you see much of anything, Barry?
I saw the Spiderwick Chronicles. Which
How is it?
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. Actually, special effects. I can't say I was crazy about the characters of the story, honestly. It takes a while to get past the family turmoil and then finally get into all the cool stuff. But, yeah, not a bad movie at all. The action sequences are terrific. And, again, the special effects are amazing. The voice work by Martin Short and especially Seth Rogen, I thought was very good. But, yeah, it's not quite even up to the Bridge of Terabithia, but it's worlds better than the Golden Compass.
So it's worth at least a rent. So
it's something worth seeing, yeah.
I do want to see it.
Yeah, actually. I liked it, but I wanted more, but it's definitely in one of the better children will save the world fantasy movies.
Fair enough. Josh, did you watch much? I know you completed a monumental reading task.
I finished Watchmen.
Yay.
Which is not a movie, but...
Well, it is, but just not out yet. So... Having read it, what is your impression? Is it a good book?
Yes. I don't want.
It's not a happy book.
I feel like I'm a member of the club now. I don't want to talk about it.
You've drank the Kool-Aid.
Brethren. Here's your geek card back. You're allowed to have it.
And, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate
anytime,
that.
Anytime. Taking it. But you had some very distinct and strong opinions about the movie. What did you tell me?
You know what? I love. Dawn of the Dead, mm-hmm. and Zach, you know, I have faith, but you're not going to get this right. this thing called The Watchmen is not a movie. It's not. It's just not. It cannot be made into a movie.
Okay.
Ever.
No, are you saying because of the time constraints?
No, I'm talking about the whole thing. Yeah, like, this is not, no. I'm sorry, Zach. I'm sorry. This is no. I have no. The movie's gonna suck.
Wow.
With 6 hours, maybe you think like as an HBO miniseries, you think it could work ever?
No. I honestly feel like the graphic novel is what it is, and that's The Watchmen, and
it wasn't crying out to be made a new movie.
No. No. Okay. No. I think it's important for the time and well, honestly I'm so like soft-spoken about it, like I can't talk about it, like,
well, this is also the first like comic series you've read, right?
This is the first comic I've ever read.
Okay.
So, I swear to God. So no, don't you made don't a, touch it you made I will I will I and no I will go see The Watchmen, but
you have no expectations.
I will be totally blank face when I see it. And now I understand you guys like geek hyping the movie and stuff. I can't. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Wow.
But Barry, you think it looks good, right? I mean,
I'm excited to see it just because on one hand, I've always wanted to watch a movie because, you know, guys, I mean, it's so cinematic in its panels and the way it's presented and everything. But on the other hand, Alan Moore has said countless times that there are things that he does in there that he said almost resisted a cinematic approach, that he wanted purposely to make it that way so that you couldn't do a movie out of this because of the approach, it just resists cinematic conventions.
I think part of the issue is how much internal monologue there is in The Watchmen.
There's a lot.
And that's how I feel. I feel like this is The Watchmen and it's a graphic novel, and don't touch it. Just leave it alone.
It's a story within a story within a story, so it's really tricky to capture that.
Leave it alone.
I actually have something that we're going to give away when Watchmen comes out.
Great.
I might as well just say what it is now. Please. Just to make everyone kind of freak out. I actually have an issue of The Watchmen. I have issue number 2.
Great.
Of like the original comic book run. So, you know, it's huge for geek cred. I figured, hey, let's give it away when it comes out. So
it's awesome.
As that comes closer.
And I did watch Death Proof again.
Mm-hmm. And you watched a bunch of movies
just
that came
as
out
this good. Week. And I watched Guys and Dolls.
Which really,
Guys and Dolls? My mom got upset and shut it off. And she's a dance teacher, and I actually wanted to finish watching it, but she did not. So
this is Brando and Sinatra.
Yeah. She got bored, and she shut it off. Hmm. So obviously, it's not Step Up 2.
Okay.
Fair enough. Guess which one, Beth?
Josh, what is Step Up 2?
Nothing. Streets, I guess. You know. I don't know.
Gotcha. All
right. Yeah, for what I saw, I liked.
What did you see this week?
I saw one thing I like saw 2 weeks ago and totally forgot to say. I watched Batman Gotham Knight and was so very disappointed.
Yeah.
It was a waste. Like, the last bit was interesting, but beyond that, it was my first download I've ever done on Xbox Live doing video before my Xbox Red ringed. But I was, to say disappointed really is an understatement. I was just, I finished it because, well, I started it. Okay, I may as well finish it.
The whole beginning with the different stories of the Batman was so annoying. I mean, I wanted to get to the Batman. I mean, I didn't need to see all that.
I think that that's probably why they got Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman from the animated series, to come back, is because he lends some credibility that's going to make everyone like it naturally, because everyone likes his voice work.
I did like the Croc guy.
What's the Killer Croc?
Killer Croc and the Scarecrow stuff. I did like that. As soon as that picked up, I got into the movie.
Which is like near the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, just, yeah. Yeah.
Is it worth seeing it all? Because, you know, I got to say, Dave, like I had no intention at all of seeing Justice League America. You said, Barry, give it a look. I did. Freaking loved it.
Oh, New Frontier. This is...
Not
even on the level. I am truly disappointed in DC. This is the first time I've ever been actually disappointed with Bruce Timm.
You have to admit, the Animatrix set the bar so high.
It did. I
mean, it did.
Because the Animatrix is better than anything in that trilogy except for the original film.
Okay, shut up. But it was really good. It was good.
And then, let's see, what else did I watch? We watched more Mad Men, which we're getting more and more hooked on. It's a good show, worth checking out. I'm still working my way through The Office, but I can't talk about it yet because we're going to do an episode about it. I know.
How far, though? How far
are you? I haven't gotten past that first disc yet. I finished the first disc, but I know. I'm so much to watch, man. And then Steph and I have watched the first disc of Birds of Prey, which just came out like last week or 2 weeks ago. It's pretty darn decent.
Cool.
It's very much girl-centric. Like, the main villain is Harley Quinn, played by Mia Sara.
Interesting. Which cool.
She plays crazy really good. That's all I'm saying. And then I think that's about it for this week. It's been a busy week. So, all right, let's talk about hit theaters this week and get into that, and because there's much to talk about.
From the director of High Tension and The Hills of Eyes remake, according to Josh, a step down. We'll let him talk about that in a second. Kiefer Sutherland starring in Mirrors. The movie nobody camped out to see, Star Wars The Clone Wars. Anybody know how it's done yet so far, box office wise?
I don't know.
I don't care enough to look it up.
Wednesday, a movie we're split on, but even I'll admit is one of the funniest films of the year. Tropic Thunder, starring everybody. Woody Allen's Muy Sexy Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
Which we have to see.
We will see.
We will see tomorrow.
We will see that. Oh, yeah. Heck yeah. And then in limited release, a movie that's playing everywhere here in the Springs, Fly Me to the Moon in 3D.
Yeah.
Apparently great in 3D. Apparently, if it's playing not in 3D, don't see it.
Don't even bother, yeah.
And then finally, also in limited release, although getting great reviews likewise, is Luke Wilson and Henry Poole is here.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've heard great things
about that. Okay, so I have the weekend numbers.
Okay.
Clone Wars came in third, just $15.5 million.
What's number 15? One, Dark Knight.
That's really good for that, actually.
It's essentially it's a pilot for a freaking TV show.
I mean, that's excellent for that. I mean, you know, it's
wow. Actually, it's, yeah, I was gonna guess like six.
I was thinking that just because the advance word was so bad, but 15, that's a triumph for that movie. It's gonna make bank.
Oh yeah, wow. Yeah, Dark Knight ended up beating it at 16.8 million.
So Tropic Thunder's number one.
Yes, with 26 million.
Awesome. Great.
Thank you.
Great.
Yes.
There is a God.
And Mirrors came in just below Star Wars at just over 11 million.
11? Wow, that's actually pretty good for that movie.
And Dark Knight is officially the second highest domestic grossing movie of all time.
Okay. If you count with box office, because ticket-wise, because it used to be something different.
Oh, yeah, because
in terms of tickets,
IMAX sales.
No movie will ever beat Gone with the Wind in terms of that movie sold more tickets. But in terms of how much money, then yeah, you can't beat The Dark Knight.
Absolutely.
Or Titanic.
Can I please talk about Mirrors?
Yeah, let's just start with
I even hold off to you guys. Oh, my God.
Oh, wait a minute. I forgot. I have to get the bleep button ready.
Yeah, please.
Okay, I'm
please.
Ready.
Please, because kid theory.
Censor standby.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So you got this movie where Kiefer Sutherland is a police officer, I guess, at this old burnt down museum shopping mall where I guess like it burned down, but there's curtains up still, and and I guess, you know, he's checking out. He's a drunk. He's lost his wife, and it's Mrs. Doubtfire all over.
So a horror version.
You have like honestly, like I really okay. Preface, I really wanted to like this movie. I like Hills of Eyes. I will defend Hills of Eyes, and I love High Tension. I love High Tension, and Alexander Andre or whatever his name is.
Aja.
Oh my god. Why? Why did you do this movie? So he's guarding this museum, and it's burnt down, and the curtains are still up, and the mannequins are still up, and he's there's like ghosts in the mirrors, and somehow it's like 24, it's like a bad episode of 24, and he gets Tourette's halfway through, and he's like he's calling his wife, and he goes, "Don't look in the water because there's reflections and." And mirrors, and he hangs up. And like, honestly, like, this is the worst. This is so bad. I was laughing so hard.
So is this Kiefer Sutherland's A Man Apart?
Yes, but okay. Oh, worse than that. And my mom was trying to like it, but I was laughing so hard that she couldn't. I mean, by the time that he said, like, the 46th time, I was like, you have to be kidding me. So, I mean, and finally, it all narrows down to, and spoiler, if you're going to see the movie, it's a ghost that's in a nun that he tracks down and brings back to the museum, and the ghost comes out, and she's like, the exorcist, I mean, like, me explaining the movie just makes no sense.
Oh, that's right. The other movie I saw, it's like when I try to describe Pineapple Express.
It's worse than that. Oh, dude, I would sit through Pineapple like 6 times before seeing this.
But with how long it is, it feels more like 12. Sorry.
That's so bad. I would honestly watch like all 12 seasons of 24 before I would see this again. This is so bad. So bad. And it pisses me off. I'm so upset because why did Midnight Meat Train get dumped and then this shit comes out?
Fair enough.
I'm sorry.
I missed the bleep.
My bad. Oh, yeah. You missed that one.
That's okay. So can we talk Pineapple Express really quick?
Let me ask you really quick, though. Just quick question because this is good stuff.
Yeah, like, it is. It absolutely is.
No, I appreciate this because I was kind of curious and now I'm not. the bit in the trailer, the one part in the trailer that I thought was genuinely unsettling, the whole bit with Amy Smart, no good? Yeah.
No. No. Like, honestly, if a good director, which... he is, but not in this movie. If a good director would have taken the material and, you know, made it his own, it would have been a good movie. The plot was good. It could have been, like The Ruins, it could have been a good movie.
Yeah.
This sucked so much. It was so bad. No.
Good job.
Amy Smart was his sister, and the movie didn't even play by its own rules. Like, That was the only scene that she wasn't looking in the mirror and she ripped her jaw off, right?
Yeah.
Which, right. Okay. So everyone else, like Kiefer Sutherland, he's looking in the mirror and he puts a gun to his head and he shoots himself, but he looks away and he's safe. It doesn't make it's oh my god.
Okay.
It's so bad. Seriously, like watch like Vanishing Point and this and Double Feature and you will be happy. It's so bad. It's so bad.
Wow, man.
And I just wanted to chime in really quick about Pineapple Express. I wish I would have seen Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants too.
Wow.
It wasn't that bad.
There were two spots that I laughed. They recapped the entire movie. The whole thing.
That really pissed me off.
Like seriously, I take it back. The third spot I laughed at was the Killing the Unicorns.
Okay.
You had Bill Hader's spot at the beginning, which was fall down funny.
And Daryl from The Office, the warehouse guy, and the pudding, when he put his hands in.
No.
That was funny. No?
I,
okay.
like, I think a lot of it is that opening scene with Bill Hader set the bar so high for me.
That's true.
And the rest of the movie just did not. I mean, I can't tell you what happened in probably a good hour of that movie because there nothing happened.
Yeah.
Like, it should have been at least 40 minutes shorter.
I can't wait to hear what Barry has to say.
Well, I think it's funny because, once again, the three of us are on very different degrees of what we thought about this movie.
Yeah, this is going on my worst of list as of right now.
Okay.
Almost.
Yeah, because you saw Mirrors.
Honestly.
Yeah.
What did you hate more than Mirrors? I got one more question about Mirrors. What did you hate more? Anything you think of that this year you've seen you've hated more? Not in your life. I mean, just this year.
I don't know if it's like... It's like Spider-Man 3. Like, I really, really, really... I was sitting there like... It's got really good parts, but it's Spider-Man 3. Like, honestly, okay. Like, it was really bad. I mean, like I said, if a good director would have done it, it would have been awesome. But okay. No, honestly, like, don't even bother. Honestly, I swear to God.
Okay, so Pineapple Express. I think the key problem with this movie, and this is a movie I also wanted to really love, and I just kind of liked it. It rambled so much that I really get the sense that Evan and Seth must have been so stoned when they wrote it because it rambles so ridiculously. At 90 minutes, I think this movie could have been really great. It's not even close to the same neighborhood as Superbad. But the parts.
No,
it isn't. No. But the parts that made me laugh, I really did laugh very hard. But there is so much of it where nothing is happening and the movie just kind of coasting on its own good nature. But, like, truly, the scene where they're sitting around at the end at the diner, completely unnecessary. The movie should have been over after the warehouse sequence.
Yeah.
Bill Hader's scene I thought was great. I thought James Franco was hysterical. There's a lot of dialogue.
And James Franco stole that.
Franco was great in the movie. And there's so many bits of dialogue that had a movie and pop culture references that were really sneaky and clever. That I thought really funny.
The raincore.
Yeah, it was like, exactly. Is the raincore going to be down there? And I thought the action sequences, even though it took forever to get to them, I loved them. I thought the car chase was hilarious. The all stops out action sequence at the end. I love Gary Cole's fight with Seth Rogen. It was so ridiculous and funny.
I actually think I'm on your side more.
Yeah, because I admit this movie is such a mixed bag. And when I see it on DVD again, I'll definitely like. Okay, I don't need to see the whole wood scene again.
You're gonna see it again.
Sorry. I liked the wood scene. That was like the funniest thing in the whole movie.
I think I've blocked it. I've blocked most of the movie because.
Which one though? Because there's the scene where they're running around. There's the one where they're doing leapfrog. And they're like,
no, not that one.
Okay,
it was like the butterfly where he's like. What the hell? You know,
that
whole thing.
Yeah.
But like you said, I mean, it was so unnecessary. A lot of it was.
There's a lot of stuff that I'm sure when we listen to the DVD commentary, we'll be like, oh, we thought this was hilarious. And it's like, well, we didn't.
You were stoned.
Yeah.
You see, last week you said by the time the action got there, you didn't care anymore.
Yeah.
I was praying that they would speed through it so the credits could roll so I could get out of there.
It's kind of, I mean, which is sad because I wanted another Beverly Hills Cop. I mean, I wanted... You know, Eddie Murphy, I wanted all this. It wasn't that.
No, not even.
No.
Okay. Shall we move on to other... Since we're supposed to be talking about movies that came out this week. I do. I apologize for derailing us. I had to. Did anyone see anything else besides Tropic Thunder? Okay.
No.
Shall we talk about Tropic Thunder?
We will see Vicky, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's here, so we'll see it.
Cool. If I hated Danny McBride in Pineapple Express, I thought he was awesome in Tropic Thunder. Just because I think it was the melted ear thing that did it for me. I thought Tropic Thunder was far and away better than Pineapple Express.
Tropic Thunder, I think, is this year's comedy, like hands down. I mean, this is this year's Borat.
If you go see it and you haven't seen it yet, make sure you get there in time to watch the trailers because there are special trailers. I would almost put the trailers on the level with the Grindhouse trailers.
Yeah, it's Grindhouse all over again. I mean,
yeah, the Satan's.
Oh, Satan's Alley. Oh,
it's just so out there. Now, I had a little bit, and I was predisposed to. I wanted to see this, but I was predisposed to hate this movie because there was a couple sitting in front of me, and the lady just really wanted to laugh at something. I guess so. Every time like they showed anything, she would laugh like hysterically, and I just almost wanted to smack her upside the head because I was sitting right behind her. But I didn't, and I ended up really enjoying this. It still had dead spots. I mean, it is not a perfect movie by a long shot. But there is some really funny stuff in it.
This year's best comedy or no?
For me, so far, I can't think of anything funny.
I mean, what?
Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Last year at Super... No.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
This is better than... No.
And I have not seen this Forgetting Sarah Marshall yet, so I cannot say that.
Which Barry's going to going to disagree, but...
Well, I still like that one better, but anyway, keep going.
I actually liked Ben Stiller in a movie.
I know. I connected with, like, the actor, with the, you know, the role that haunted him and all that. I mean, I loved every minute of this movie.
You know, like in Dodgeball, he was such a tool. It's like you laugh because he's such a pathetic idiot, which is what he's been for the past 10 years. Just about in every movie, he's been this idiot who's just, I'm just going to screw up everything in life. And I mean, I understand you hit the mainstream with There's Something About Mary, and a lot of stuff went wrong for that character. He's been playing that character in how many movies now, though?
All I Can Polly,
Meet the Parents, Meet the Fockers. Yeah.
What is the last one? Coen Brothers. No.
No, you're talking about Heartbreak Kid?
Yeah, Heartbreak Kid. Oh, bad. So bad.
I'm not going to say I've always hated Ben Stiller, because Barry and I were talking about this beforehand. I dug him in Zero Effect, in
Reality Bites.
Reality Bites. He wrote that, and he directed that, right?
He did.
I think it was more of a return to form for him.
And he directed this movie.
Yes.
Which, do it. Stay on the track. I mean, come on.
And I have to agree. I think Tom Cruise stole the movie.
I think Robert did. Think Robert did.
Oh, he was good, but that was the whole point, was for him to steal the movie.
Well,
actually, I don't know. Al Pacino was pretty funny, too.
Everyone was funny. I mean, like, I liked
Jack Black in another comedy. Holy
I felt
crap.
Like, thank God. I haven't felt like this since, like, Team America, but I sat there, and every joke I felt like was passing over my head, because I was, like, trying to just get it all, and it was so, so funny. I mean...
But again, there were dead spots. Probably could. I mean, it's sitting at 107 minutes. They probably could have cut it to 90 minutes pretty solidly and made it an extremely tight.
But how the action scenes were so much better than the Pineapple.
Oh yeah, yeah. That in a way, I was like, as far as the action goes, this movie, you know, Pineapple Express wishes it was this.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which is,
and a lot of it as well. You know, it's also a huge commentary, I think, on Hollywood and the entire culture there. You know, the lack of respect for human life.
And this
life.
Movie is like, and no holds, like, makes fun of everyone, which is...
Oh, the whole discussion about Simple Jack.
The best thing ever.
I love the whole thing about Simple Jack. And then making fun of I Am Sam at the same time. That was...
Oh yeah.
But yeah, it pointed out the farce. So I don't know. I liked it. I couldn't... I mean, I'd highly recommend it. I'm not going to say... It's not going to be my top 10, I don't think. But it was funny as...
Oh, it's in mine. It's a mine.
But I know
I'm
that
sorry, Barry.
Barry has a little bit of a different
opinion. Hey, guys.
No, it's not like you didn't like it. It's just weird.
Plus, we can agree to disagree. That's okay. Exactly. You know, we can have different opinions. That's the way the geek community should work, of course.
It but should.
It's in a perfect world, but that's not the way it works.
Then you look at some forums and not so much.
Right. Yeah. I thought it was just chaotic and grotesque and overdone and just like kind of like an explosion of a movie. There are parts of it I think were fantastic, but... For me, Ben Stiller's style, to me, this is a lot like Zoolander. It's just so heavy-handed, and every joke is like done in such a heavy-handed, smack-you-across-the-face way. I forgot that Nick Nolte's even in the movie. There's so much stuff in this movie.
I love the way that Steve Coogan exited the film.
Which
That's
is,
all I'm going to say.
Like, honestly, I want to see it again. I want to see it again. That's why.
I'm not sure that I want to let Robert Downey Jr. off the hook for playing blackface, honestly. Here's the thing. Just hear me out here.
Oh, no. Because,
on one hand, the movie is totally covered because, you know, he's an Australian actor. There's another African-American character in the movie who keeps acknowledging the fact that it's ridiculous that he's doing it. But it's still 2008, and you still got a white guy in blackface pretending to be black for laughs. And it's like, if Matthew Lillard had played this role, you know, we would be, you know, tying him to a pole and setting him on fire. But because we love Robert Downey Jr.
Well, it's because Robert Downey Jr. can also act.
And Robert Downey Jr. is fantastic. And because we, you know, we have such goodwill towards him. And honestly, he's so committed to the role that he actually makes the character, I think it's Lazarus.
Yeah.
He actually makes him a real character in, for whatever that's worth. That's like, we want to let him off the hook, but the movie has such an anti-PC slant to the whole thing.
It does.
I can't say that I want to let him completely off the hook for that.
That's why I liked it, though. I mean, it was so
well and
anti what I usually watch. I mean,
okay. What I'm about to say does not, I am not putting this film in the same class as Blazing Saddles. Okay, Blazing Saddles is a film all by itself. Had it just been him in blackface and they tried to make this movie, it'd be one thing. The farcical elements of it, though, you know, putting Simple Jack in there, putting things like that, you know, essentially pointing out the hypocrisy of what goes on in Hollywood, mm-hmm. makes me forgive it.
I mean, and Tom Cruise? Did you like Tom Cruise?
Yeah, I did. I did. I didn't think it was quite as spectacular. Everybody built it.
Everyone,
I thought I thought his second scene was especially funny, but his opening scene, like, really? That's him just using a few F-bombs?
Yeah, I was like, is this all it's going to be? And then they used him more. Yeah,
thank God they used him more.
Yeah, I'm glad it wasn't just that one cameo. Yeah. I'm like, really? That's it? Just that one scene?
And I thought Matthew McConaughey was pretty funny in it, too.
He was so good.
And I hate Matthew McConaughey.
Me too.
Yes.
I didn't like Jack Black at all in this movie. I thought he was so unappealing. No. I didn't like his character. I didn't like his performance. No.
Same here.
I really didn't.
Yeah. I don't know. When he was getting ready to all I'll say, Panda. That made me laugh so hard.
Awesome.
Yes. Yes. The
part and even Panda. Even the...
the water buffalo,
the little,
initially.
The little kid that was the kingdom of the village. I don't he was awesome.
Yes. So yeah, but I that's not to say that you didn't like it, Barry.
I think it's a mixed bag. I really did. It's arguably gorier than any of the movies it's parodying. No. It was so grotesque, frequent,
absolutely,
and very, very foul. I mean, you know, if you're up for that, cool. But to me, it was such an overdone movie. I think Stiller's script was very, very good, and there's a lot of rich satirical targets. But I just felt that his approach was just so heavy-handed. I wish there was a director who was just, I don't want to say lighter in touch, because this is not a subtle movie in any way, shape, or form. wish it just felt so chaotic to me. Even like the action sequences. I mean, yeah, they're big. I mean, you know, it's a $90 million movie. But for me, it felt a little out of control at times.
Well, and honestly, that's why I liked it. It was so in your face.
And I will fully admit, generally a lot of stupid slapstick I hate.
Oh,
same. But sometimes a movie just catches me at the right time in the right way, and this one did.
Sure.
So,
yeah. And, you know, the Team America comparison is great, because if Team America was a live-action movie, it would look like Tropic Thunder.
Exactly.
It would be Tropic Thunder. Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Well, it's a very good comparison.
Yes. Well, let's while we're like 25 minutes, 27 minutes in this, let's talk about what DVDs are hitting this week and hit some news and, yeah.
All right.
Don't go see Mirrors.
in case you didn't hear the first part of the podcast, Terminator the Sarah Connor Chronicles season 1 is coming out. A movie that two teenage girls in Tulutha, Idaho are looking forward to seeing, a Camp Rock Extended Rock Star Edition,
because it doesn't have Miley Cyrus. That's why it's not. I don't know.
But I think that's the Jonas Brothers, isn't it?
Yeah, because you can't turn on the TV without seeing them. That's the only reason I know this.
That's right. So, hey, got to get the DVD. Watch it on a loop.
Or you know not.
The adorable Amy Adams and Frances McDormand and Mrs. Pettigrew Lives for a Day. Could be Amy good. Adams, I don't know. Yes. She's cute. Keanu Reeves in a movie nobody saw, nobody liked, really, Street Kings. Anybody hear any good things about this?
I actually did. My dad.
Yeah?
Once again, came through and he said he saw it in theaters. He snuck in. And he said it was good.
Okay.
So I have no idea.
I've heard really negative things about it.
I don't know if it's good or bad things.
So I heard it has a good script, but that Reeves is so miscast that it kind of brings the movie down.
So it's like Soldier?
Oh. Soldier's good, though. It's Kurt Russell. You can't.
Okay.
Josh walks alone.
Yeah. So Paul, what script, buddy. Anderson?
Even you?
I didn't like Soldier.
Oh, Paul did that?
Paul, what script?
Okay, I just
Paul Anderson.
I disown it. Never mind.
Quick tangent. I was in line for Scanner Darkly, and some nerd in front of me was talking to his other nerd friends. And I got no problem with that. I'm overhearing his conversation. He was telling me his favorite Ridley Scott movie was Soldier, and he was telling his friends because Soldier makes a reference to Blade Runner in it. And it's true. It makes a little offhand reference to Blade Runner, because it's written by the same guy. But this guy was telling his friends, out of all of Ridley Scott's films, Soldier is the richest. It made me so angry now my animosity for the movie is complete.
Scratch that.
So,
okay.
All right. Guilty pleasure. Not a good movie, but you know what? I had fun watching it. Prom Night. Available in R-rated and unrated edition. You know, it's like...
I can't wait to see it.
Like, my credibility is gone. One of the more shocking films of the year, Ellen Page in American Crime. Tough stuff, but... amazing acting, especially by Catherine Keener. And finally, Orson Welles, Don Quixote.
Awesome. I'm kind of surprised. I wonder if Lost in La Mancha, I mean, even though I know it was years ago, but I wonder if that kind of pushed someone to try to actually get this released.
Yeah, curiosity. Yeah, because this is, as far as I know, this is a lost, uncompleted film. So I don't know if they finish it. I don't know if this is the version that I know a French filmmaker years ago tried to actually put it together, and it got booed from a Cannes audience. I don't know what this is.
Wow.
But yeah, I have to see what it is. Cool.
All right, well, let's move on to some news.
Yes.
And I'll let's I'll let you take the big one, Barry.
Okay. Well, we got the holiday movie shuffle going on. Mr. Potter and his Half-Blood Prince coming out in November. Now the summer movie. Meanwhile, Valkyrie, Bryan Singer's Nazi thriller starring Tom Cruise, which looked like box office poison. It's now in the plum, December 26th, Oscar bait.
That's so weird.
And apparently it had a really fantastic preview screening where people applauded and said, it's an Oscar movie. So now it's
Bryan Singer.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I know a lot of people hate Superman.
No, returns, I love.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Bryan Singer. And
I love
him.
Yeah.
You know, what's funny though, I wonder how much Tropic Thunder has to do with this. Because really, this, you know, because of Tropic Thunder, all of a sudden Cruise
is a hot commodity again.
Yeah, again. So,
yeah. Interesting. And along with Potter moving out, Bolt and Twilight have moved into that slot.
That's right.
Barry and I are the only ones excited for Bolt.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to see Bolt. Awesome.
Someone has to be.
Hey.
I thought Fido was a better Lassie movie. Sorry.
Fido was a great Lassie movie.
Yeah. I guess Bolt would probably fit more as a Benji movie.
Yeah,
I could see that. Yeah. Disney, yeah.
Yeah. Oh. And have you got anything at all this week, Josh?
I have nothing.
Okay, fair enough. Well, no, you have something. I just have the news that the An American Carol trailer came up.
Well,
and yeah, debuted.
I saw.
Yeah, it debuted on Fox News Channel on the O'Reilly Factor.
What a weird place Bill to debut. O'Reilly.
No, if you've seen the trailer, it makes sense.
Oh, does it? Okay.
It doesn't look as good as
it
sounds.
I love the Zucker Brothers, but...
No.
You know, I think it was Peter over at Slash Film said that it essentially looks about on the level of Postal. Yeah. And I
really?
It does
but
not...
Sad. Like a Republican Postal.
Yeah.
It's a right-wing Postal.
Is that part of the joke, though? I mean, is it like Steve Colbert where it's making fun of right-wing as well?
No.
Really?
No. I'm all for him, but no.
Yeah,
Well, that's disappointing.
It is. I, looking at the trailer, I'm like, I might see it in the Dollar Theater or rent it.
I don't even think I laughed during the trailer.
I was like, what?
I was kind of in shock.
It almost, I hate to reference this. It looks on the level of like a date movie or an epic movie.
Yeah, it does.
It's bad.
It does.
Oh, that's terrible news.
Yeah. But it has Bill O'Reilly in it.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Just what we needed.
Bush, go see it.
Yeah. Have you got anything else, Barry?
No, sir.
Okay, I got two things left. You got the Valkyrie thing. Mike Myers, been casting in Glorious Bastards.
Okay, I'm so upset about this whole casting process.
Why? Why did
it's
they cast
him? It's all comedians. It's all comedians.
Well, no, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No,
there's
it's
a very
not.
Popular train of thought with various directors that comedic actors do a better job with drama because comedy is a lot harder to pull off.
But I'm a Tarantino,
it's Mike Myers.
I'm a Tarantino fan, and it's Mike Myers. And this whole thing is like, you know, I've been waiting for this Tarantino war movie. What is he doing with the casting?
Let me throw this out really quick. Mike Myers, completely dramatic, serious performance in 54. The only good thing about that movie.
I've never seen that.
And solid, I thought. Really, really solid. You know,
I don't think he's in it long enough for me to actually form an opinion of whether he's really good in it or not.
Really, I thought he was very good in that film. And the thing is, you know, if you look at the stuff, the people he's put, I mean, prior to seeing Pulp Fiction, John Travolta as a hitman, David Carradine being a great actor in Kill Bill, he has surprised us with actors before. So, yeah, outrageous.
I'm like full-on Tarantino, like hardcore, so... Whatever, but
here's my one gripe about Inglourious Basterds. Could you just give us the whole bloody affair of Kill Bill first, please? That you've been promising us for how many years, and keeps getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back.
Five, maybe.
They had box art at Comic Con. It was supposed to come out in January, and then it's been indefinitely pushed back. Finish something, please. That's all I'm asking. And then give us the Grindhouse theatrical cut.
Yeah, please.
You know, take care of some like business that needs to be taken care of, and
Grindhouse.
Then,
so bad.
Yeah. Although totally spaced it. Speaking of spaced, and you brought Tarantino, so it made me remember it. I rented the second disc of the Spaced set, and what kind of helps our topic for today is every single commentary at some point devolves to bashing the original. I mean, the prequel trilogy of Star Wars,
good,
which is hilarious. So, and Tarantino was his story about having not seen any of them except for Episode 3 on Edgar Wright's recommendation. It's gold. Yeah, it's good stuff.
I will with Barry defend the prequel trilogy.
Okay, well, we'll get into that.
Like
it's going to be a tough round.
We'll get to that. And then finally, our good friend Mark Luigi. He's worked on The Pit and the Pendulum. We talked about it at Starfest. It is getting a DVD release as of August 22nd. He's at the Rue Morgue Horror Convention up in Toronto, and he's going to have copies that are for sale. You can also hit the banner up at the top of our site, and you'll get information of how to order it from there. Check it out. It is so good. And I actually discussed like pricing and stuff, and it sounds like it's going to be really reasonable. It's not going to be like $25 for a 6-minute short or something stupid like that. So, which is good. Yeah, check it out. It's going to be sweet.
Fantastic.
Shall we take a quick break?
Yes.
Because we've talked more than enough by a long shot.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's all good. It's all good. But yeah, we'll be right back.
Sue Ellen Greenblatt is a real person, not an internet celebrity. So we've enlisted Billy Flynn and the Vicar to help her tell her story.
Geek Radio Daily gives me geeky news about movies, new DVD releases, even comics and gaming.
Geek Radio Daily makes me feel special.
Ah, yeah.
Womanly.
Yeah.
Okay, so the episodes are just 15 minutes, perfect for my commute or for just geeking out while I'm at the office.
Mm. All in one concise love package.
Ooh, the package, baby.
Uh-huh. And the best part is that it's a daily cast, so I'm always in the loop.
Sometimes I listen to it out of the bath, put on little outfits.
Ah!
It makes me want to invite all my friends over to show how refreshed I feel.
A slumber party, baby.
What? That's not what I said.
Get out the
chocolate mousse.
Duct tape.
Oh, get out of here, you freaks.
Geek Radio Daily. One 15-minute podcast provides 15% of the USDA recommended daily allowance of geeky goodness. Subscribe through iTunes or visit geekradiodaily.com.
So you were talking over the ad.
I'm sorry.
You're still ranting on about mirrors.
I would rather watch Poltergeist 3, which is actually, you know what, the gore in that movie is actually shocking.
And Poltergeist 3?
Yes.
I was shocked at how bad it was.
Well, it's terrible, but oh my god, mirrors.
Yeah, I'll say this, when Poltergeist 3 came out 20 years ago, as a kid, I thought the movie is unintentionally funny, and not to mention nowhere near as good as Poltergeist 1 or 2, but
no,
especially not 1. But the thing is, the whole notion of your reflection attacking you, I've always found that scary. I always have.
And that's mirrors, but
not good.
Poltergeist 3.
Poltergeist 3 does it better. You couldn't have bashed mirrors more thoroughly now.
No.
Yeah.
No.
You've broken the mirror.
So what are we talking about this week?
The people versus George Lucas. Dun, dun, dun. In one corner, we have Prosecutor Minkus, who's going to essentially take Mr. Lucas to task. And then we have his defense team, which I think
I'm in the middle.
You're in the middle, because you're going to run back and forth between Dave and I. And I'm going to pitifully try to defend Mr. Lucas for the last 30 years.
No, I'm just going to start with the newest one. First of all, we have the giant, like, the whole cluster at Ain't It Cool about the reviews. Did you guys witness this? Apparently, they didn't enforce this embargo on any other website except for Ain't It Cool. And reading the reviews, I can see why they'd want to shut them down, because the reviews have not been kind.
Yeah.
There's one, the one guy who liked it was Moriarty, and he's officially said he's never talking about Lucas stuff ever again because of this whole embargo issue. And it's
ridiculous, because I mean, who cares if it's a good review or a bad review? Even bad reviews make me want to see a movie.
Yeah,
why are they censoring them?
Like The Happening. Oh, sorry.
Wicker Man.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Billy Flynn called me on Friday. He actually called me to tell me that he actually told me to download the movie because it's just not worth your money. You know, you have the baby farting, pooing Jabba the Hutt. You have Jabba's gay uncle.
No. You're making this up.
No.
No.
And
gay uncle? This is news to me.
He's not like openly, but everyone's like the way he dresses, the way he talks, everything.
Oh, come on.
And then you have the girl apprentice, who essentially you can tell they wish that they had Hannah Montana playing.
Objection, Your Honor. This is a movie we haven't even seen.
She calls him Sky. She calls Anakin Sky Guy through the entire movie.
Sky Guy?
She calls R2-D2 R2-E. Yeah. Just...
Which, Lucas, come on. I mean, you've got...
I don't need to know
the
first
option. Like, a strong female Jedi, and you do that?
Because they wants to bring the girls in, apparently. Okay, sorry. Now, shall we start with...
Now that we bashed a movie we haven't seen, but okay.
Oh, and here's the thing. I'm just talking about the facts of the movie. That's the annoying part of it.
But do we know that's... I mean, Jabba's gay uncle.
Every single review I have read.
I actually still would go see it.
Yeah, me too.
Because you want to see...
It's Star Wars. It's Star Wars.
And the action scenes, I mean, to me, like, the whole idea of it was great, because it's like, okay, none of the flat acting, it's just the action, which was the strongest part of the prequels, honestly.
Yeah.
See, that describes the Clone Wars cartoon, which I loved, absolutely, because it was so different from the movies. Okay, yeah. Shall we start with the good of Lucas that we can kind of agree on? Like American Graffiti.
Okay.
Wow.
Going all the way back to 1973. Yeah, okay.
It's a good movie.
It's a great movie.
It's him pulling, I believe it was pulling from his, you know, experiences as a teenager. But it was compelling. It had good story. It was fun to watch.
The performances are great. The characters are great. It's technically brilliant. It's a movie in which all the music was in sync with the story, even at the screenplay level. And it works like wonders. It's a beautiful
Absolutely. It is the movie that makes me have some level of respect for George Lucas more than anything else he's done.
Okay.
Well, I want to get your guys' opinion on THX.
I have not seen it.
Because I have not seen it.
I like the film a lot. I like it a lot. It's very cold in the way a Kubrick movie is cold. It's not the most likable film because it is so much about this society that is just bearing down on the people, just trying to crush their souls, and how these two individuals escape emotionally because they fall in love with each other, and physically because they get the heck out of there. Visually, it's incredible, but it's kind of like Full Metal Jacket in the sense that it's one of these movies you admire but you don't really love. But if anything, just seeing Lucas go from THX to American Graffiti show that he had enormous amount of versatility, which of course we haven't seen in decades. So
this is me building my case. Which even I'll
admit, it's true. Yeah, you know. So
Indiana Jones.
No. Let's not jump. We're gonna do chronology.
Let's do it.
This is gonna be a thorough case. Let's give a thorough case.
I'd rather not just be like the perception of a lot of fanboys and just say, he sucks because of blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
We'll get there.
We'll get there.
You know, you have to present your full case. Okay. You know, you have to be completely honest. And, I really enjoy American Graffiti. Yeah. So,
likewise.
All right, let's move on.
But to Star Wars A New Hope, 1977. Anything we don't like about this movie?
You know, it is a hokey movie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when it comes down to it.
Yeah.
But it has such an honesty and almost an innocence about it.
Yeah.
That's just so earnest. It pulls you in, and really, you can't help but like it when it comes down to it. It's I don't know. I just really enjoy the fantasy adventure of it all. In a way, it does very much belong in the same world as Indiana Jones. So
definitely. Can we defend how much can we defend the performances of this movie? Other than Alec Guinness, Peter Cushing, and Harrison Ford.
I want to go to Tosche Station and get power converters.
Mr. Hamill, as much as I like him
personally. Now we know where he gets it from. Now we know where Luke gets it from.
Yeah.
The whiny bit-iness of it. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like you said, bringing in Alec Guinness, bringing in Peter Cushing really brings in a lot of legitimacy to the movie as well. Sure. And they play the parts straight and play them nobly, as they well should be. Which really, I think it really added a lot to the film.
I think Hamill's performance got better as the movies progressed.
Absolutely.
But in the first Star Wars, I think it's clear, you know, you've got Harrison Ford, who had acted before, and you've got Mark Hamill, who is clearly very green, which is good for the character, admittedly. It's good
Can I ask, please, why is Empire Strikes Back, like, the Star Wars movie?
Well, let's jump to it.
That's my least favorite.
Really? Honestly. Okay, well, this is good. This is good because most people would say it's their very favorite.
Initially, it was my least favorite because it's just not a happy story.
No, well, that's not even... It's not a good movie.
Well?
I don't know. I'll let you start there.
Well, I think, first of all, Irvin Kershner, even though he's a very, you know, very limited guy, I mean, other than a few of the films, including RoboCop 2, he hasn't done a lot. But he brought a real edginess to the Star Wars story that certainly the first one did not have. The first one is kind of a golly gee, this is fun adventure movie, with very few exceptions. Empire is kind of a gritty, if I could even use that to describe
it. It's
a gritty movie from the first scene on, from the whole scenes, you know, with the Tauntaun even. I mean, it's like, this is really not the cute stuff from the first movie. I also like, because the story, I mean, in terms of location and ambition, it's really big. You've got the Hoth stuff, which is really on almost like on like a sci-fi David Lean kind of level. I mean, it's really big. Then you get all the stuff with Yoda, which is really ambitious, because you've got Mark Hamill acting with a puppet, and that could be so disastrous. And instead, the puppet's one of the most endearing characters in the movie. You got all this stuff with Cloud City, which is not only incredibly imaginative, but it's got that great twist as to, you know, Lando Calrissian screwing them over, actually, and he's kind of like this anti-hero. And then you've got what happens to Han Solo, which is really crushing, because mm-hmm. everybody loves Han Solo. And then ultimately, you've got the end battle between Luke and Vader, which ends up being, I think, still one of the greatest.
We need to describe it like
well,
that.
And let me also make another comparison. You could almost make a comparison between Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back, as you could with X-Men and X-Men 2.
Yeah.
Star Wars really establishes the characters, who they are, what they believe, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And Empire gets into the real meat of a story.
Yes. Yeah, because Star Wars, Empire has the budget and it actually can fulfill the ambition.
Whereas they have X-Men, a real director?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, well, because X-Men 1, you know, it didn't really have the budget, whereas X-Men 2 really is the grand comic book movie.
Absolutely. I mean, Empire Strikes Back, there's no doubt about it. It's a less toy kid-friendly movie.
Yeah.
But absolutely.
What didn't you like about it, Josh?
I don't know. And I like
the just not
for,
fun?
And I for
just,
the longest I time, know, I was in your camp, Josh. I will absolutely.
Maybe when I'm 28. my favorite. I don't know. I grew up with the original, and that's what.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up with the other ones. I didn't progress like you guys did through there. The trilogy.
Well, as a kid, Jedi was my ultimate favorite. To me, you couldn't get better.
Yeah, and Jedi is Jedi. That's
because
my favorite
Jedi was a toy commercial.
Well, it's fun. Ewoks, it's so much fun.
Yes.
Yeah, you can't.
With the very notable exception of the very end with the final battle, that was extremely. I mean, that belonged right with the Empire Strikes Back. I thought, you know, just how brutal the fight was, with how serious and how dark of a tone it took. It kind of let, you know, the kids feel more grown up, in a big way. I thought so. Yeah.
Well, definitely. I mean, even like. I remember when they were re-released, my mom was taking me to go see him again, and she saw him like 18 times in the theaters, you know, and it's just, I don't know, the first one and the third one, I just never, it's like Empire, just no.
I think it's for me, Empire always affects me emotionally. It's the mm-hmm. one movie out of that really affects me emotionally. And in some senses, the final sequence between Luke and his father in Jedi always affected me too. But more so because in Empire, it's like, wow, you know, Leia and Solo really do love each other, and that really does affect me, because you get past that whole thing, like, you know, where it's almost like between the two of them in the first one,
yeah.
Luke and Leia, but in the second one, this love story does kind of all of a sudden kind of drop at you, and you really are affected when Han Solo gets screwed over so completely, and it doesn't end with him getting away. Like, my gosh,
yeah,
it's shocking. Absolutely. for a kid's film. Yeah.
Yeah. Empire, Return of the Jedi, I can definitely take as the joke that you know, I can take that one. It's my least favorite of the three, probably. But you know, it's still good. Like I said, I love that last that penultimate fight at the end. That really does wrap up the entire saga, loosely quoted. But at the same time, you know, when Luke finds out that Leia's his sister, you're like, you look in his eyes, and all I can think is, I kissed my sister.
Yeah. Exactly.
The joke is so easy to go there with.
Yeah,
it really is. And then when Leia finds out, she's like, I kissed my brother. You know, that just, it's funny.
Now, did you guys, to
are you going where I think you're going?
With Jedi, let's center in, like, what the problem with that movie is. And I would say that, you know, the fact that it is not a planet of Wookiees is a problem.
Absolutely.
Because the Ewoks, they're cute. And I like, you know, Warwick Davis is Wicket. And I thought the village was funny, especially when they're trying to cook Han Solo on the spit.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, a village of Wookiees would have been cool, I think.
Oh, it would have. It would have.
Episode 3, I mean.
We'll get there.
We'll get there. You know, if it had been a planet of Ewoks, how much more epic would that fight on Endor have been? You know, I mean, it's, you know, transfer it to the Wookiee planet as opposed to being on Endor.
Yeah.
That fight would have been, I mean, balls out awesome.
Because on one hand, I guess we're supposed to be touched that this, you know, it's like these little...
It's
you
a
know,
little guy overcoming the
primitive. Yeah, these primitive little warriors with their spicks, with their... Sticks, sorry. So with their sticks.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I apologize. I just stumbled on my words. Yeah. With their spears and their sticks and their rocks fighting.
Sorry.
This is what happens when you see Tropic Thunder. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
It's like you got the little guys exactly fighting the big guys, and I guess we're supposed to be touched by that. But yeah, I mean, it really was supposed to be this all out, you know, epic battle, and it just
it didn't quite materialize that way. I mean, it was fun to watch, don't get me wrong, but it could, when you look at what could have been, it's like, oh, this could have been so much cooler.
Any other problems with Jedi? Or, you know, again, Lucas did not direct this. This is Richard Marquand, a director who really didn't do a lot other than Return of the Jedi. But,
you know, I think a lot of the problem people has is based around the Ewoks. I mean, when you have Luke turning himself over to Vader, everything else, and I mean, even the opening bit with Jabba, you know, sans special edition BS.
Iki wiki no go home.
Yeah. You know, it was a good film overall, I think. You know, I mean, I enjoyed it. I still enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, do we want to discuss stuff that Luke... Well, we kind of have to talk about stuff that Lucas has written, because he didn't...
Yeah, we'll talk about the stuff he produced, because following Star Wars, the movies that he really had his hands deep in the cookie jar, two that came out the same year, one was Labyrinth, and the other was Howard the Duck. And the thing about...
And I haven't seen either one, so I'm going to be...
Okay, you know what? I love Howard the Duck. It was so bad.
But so bad it's good?
It's so bad it's good.
I think
good.
It's kind of agonizing, to tell you the truth. I used to love it when I was a kid, but not anymore.
I mean, you brought up Ninja Turtles came out the same year, and it's...
Ninja Turtles was 1990. Okay. And Howard the Duck was 86.
It's a duck and a turtle. Like, who?
Okay.
I mean, it's a live-action duck or a live-action turtle.
Gotcha.
So you're saying that you think they did good with what they had?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the special effects are good.
The special effects on Howard the Duck are excellent, yes. The story, I thought, was so bad, and the human actors. The thing,
but Leah Thompson, I mean.
Leah Thompson's adorable, but, you know, it wasn't Lorraine Vain, you know? And Tim Robbins, bless him, he embarrasses himself in that movie.
No, he does. Maybe that's why we like it.
Maybe it's a guilty pleasure.
It's so bad. All right. It's so bad. It's bad.
But I think the thing about two movies that he produced after Jedi, one Howard the Duck, the other being Radioland Murders. Radioland Murders was a movie that for years he was talking about directing, and he meant for that movie to be a prequel to American Graffiti, because the main characters are actually...
That was pretty good.
Because the main characters in Radioland Murders are the parents of Richard Dreyfuss's characters in American Graffiti. But the thing about Radioland Murders, I mean, it's state-of-the-art. It's a state-of-the-art movie in terms of the way it's made, in terms of the acting. But, like, I think with that movie and with Howard the Duck, he kind of shows that his sense of humor is kind of lame and kind of juvenile and kind of silly if he lets his sense of humor kind of take over the story. And
yeah,
I think
Leah Thompson. I mean...
Leah Thompson is adorable. No. She's adorable, but I don't think that's her best work. I don't think there's any chemistry with her in that duck suit as much as she tried. She really did try, no question.
Okay. Shall we move on from there?
All right, let's talk about the special editions in 97. Let's go there. Let's talk about this.
I have no problem with the special edition of Empire Strikes Back. None.
I bought.
So you didn't mind Luke falling down and going,
It's livable. I can deal with
it. You live with that, okay.
You know, everything else, like the way that they enhanced Cloud City, I thought was just...
Yeah, it's beautiful.
That was like the pinnacle of what could have happened, but it's also not integral to the story.
Did you like the Wampa when you really got to see the Wampa, snow monster at the beginning?
I did. Yeah. But again, you know, it wasn't something that altered what was already there.
Okay.
It enhanced it. It's kind of like with Raiders of the Lost Ark, when they came back and they took out the digital footage of the snake in front of the glass. That is to enhance the film itself.
Yeah.
You know, it's cleaning up a mistake that literally the technology wasn't there to do.
Okay.
You know, they couldn't do Cloud City the way that they wanted. That's taken to a good point. The rest of the special editions, the CG porn, if you will, the CGs, the fetish CG throughout the rest of the thing.
Fetish CG.
It is.
I bought the special edition thinking that it was, okay, this is the Star Wars trilogy.
Oh, you didn't see it theatrically?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. I saw all three of them.
Likewise, yeah. I bought tickets for like a week in advance.
No. And I bought it and I took it home and I was like, this is not what I wanted. Hmm. Oh, my God.
So you thought it was going to be the original version?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right.
But when they go to the, I don't remember the city, the port on Tatooine.
Yeah.
And they're so, like, there are little touches that they could have done. You know, you had the Jawa. You know, writing the whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
You know, little stuff like that, I'm okay with. But when it's just so overboard, the way that they redid so many of the fighter sequences is actually what really upset me, because of how visionary it was done at the time. I mean, yeah. This is a truly visionary thing. And essentially, it's Lucas saying, you know what? Screw you guys who put in all this work and did all this innovation. I'm going to do it with computer stuff now. Mm. And I really saw it as a slight against, you know, this truly amazing technological advance. And that, and, you know, Greedo. Okay.
Well, one point at a time. No, that's an excellent point about the TIE fighter sequence. You're so right, because it if I'm not mistaken, it's been a while since I've seen it, but if I'm not mistaken, almost none of the original model footage is there. It's exactly. Almost all CGI, and that stinks, because you're right, because those scenes were great, and you're right, it is a total slap in the face of the hard work of those ILM guys who did that in 77.
Had they, you know, just cleaned up the boxes that were around the box, which right. I never noticed. Yeah. I never saw it. People would say, there it is, and I wouldn't notice it, but had they cleaned that up, that's the kind of stuff I can see making sense. If they wanted to add more TIE fighter, you know, more X-Wings coming in, you know, in the background, but making it look organic still, you know, kind of like what they've done with the Star Trek original series episodes, enhancing what's there to make it fit better. But he essentially just said, nope, I'm going to wipe the slate clean of everything and start it over. And that really annoyed the crap out of me.
With the Greedo shoots first thing, have people, I mean, apparently Lucas was really torn about this, but have people for years been going, you know, Han Solo was so heartless the way he killed Greedo in cold blood. Has anybody ever felt that way? I never have.
I never thought he was heartless, but he was like, you know what, I can see where this is going and I'm going to take care of
this. It's kill or be killed. I mean, you know, and it's a Western. The whole thing, it's supposed to be like an outer space Western. I mean, this happens in Westerns.
And now you've got, you know, extra music and extra crap that I don't need, that the movie itself does not need. You know, if they wanted to enhance, you know, when R2 gets shocked by the Jawas, that's fine.
Yeah.
But if I remember correctly, they left that completely alone.
So you didn't like the Jawa scene at all? Because I did, honestly. I always wanted to see it because...
you'd never seen have you seen the original footage?
I'd seen the original footage with the Scottish actor, and I thought that would be interesting if they actually got Jabba Hutt in there. So I liked the scene just because I always wanted to see it, and I liked the way they threw Boba Fett in there at the end. I thought it was really cool.
Boba Fett was completely unnecessary. I thought that the way that they did Jabba, he looked like crap.
Don't you think it made sense? Because Boba Fett was working for him. You didn't think that made sense that he was in the scene?
The scene itself was pretty much not necessary if they couldn't animate it correctly. Mm. Now, I love the way how they worked with, you know, messing with Harrison Ford, having him step on the tail and, yes. you know, digitally moving him up and whatever.
Yeah.
But Jabba himself looked like crap. You know, there's something to be said for practical effects. You know, you look at the Jabba in Star Wars and you look at the Jabba in Return of the Jedi.
Hellboy is practical.
Oh yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, 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 yeah,
yes, 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 practical. No, no, yeah. I thought you meant Jabba the Hutt was in Hellboy. No, like, really? No.
I mean, it doesn't look like the same character at all, and that's what, and it pulled me out of the film.
Because I thought they looked good in 97. Now I think it looks cheesy, but I thought it looked better then than it does now.
And I couldn't go there. Okay. Even back then, I was like, it doesn't look as good. He looks shiny, and not like that slimy kind of shiny.
I felt like I was
he looks
watching
slick,
a magic trick. A magic trick.
Yeah, not a fan of the. And then they had to change. You know, as stupid as the Ewok song is at the end of Return of the Jedi, I missed it.
You don't. You don't like the Yanni music. Well, okay. Oh, here we go.
There you go. It seems like I'm using this once an episode now. I need to get another bad sound.
What about, did you like the way, I mean, you know, forget how you feel about the prequels. We'll get there in a second. Yeah. Did you like the way he introduced all those worlds in the last scene of Jedi, the special edition?
Mm. No.
No?
No.
And here's why. It's because instead of it being a celebration of all life across the universe, right. This was a very intimate, you know what, we fought hard, we lost people, you know, people died. This was not an easy thing to have happen, and it was a very intimate celebration because it was the people who went out and did it that were celebrating. And I think it lost all of that when they went to, you know, the intergalactic rave. Okay. Not that it was badly animated, not that it didn't look good, you know, but I thought it changed the entire point of that celebration, and that kind of irked me.
So. Okay, then you know you're making an excellent point. Before we get to the prequels, where this is really going to get
nasty. And I'm not even taking the prequels into mind right now.
No, you're making such an excellent point, Dave, and I do want to bring something up, and I know you really appreciate this, Josh. The South Park episode, Get Hat. Free hat. It's making the same point that you're making right now, which is that it's one thing to clean up the stuff that didn't work, like the fact that when the land speeders are going across the desert, you've got the little stuff underneath.
Yeah, the petroleum jelly.
And that stuff looked great when they cleaned that up. But yes. You're right. When you're doing stuff that takes away from the integrity of the scene, I mean, we haven't mentioned the Jabba the Hutt musical sequence in Jedi, which is so dreadful. It is so dreadful. It really is.
Yes.
And I for the most part, I did enjoy the special editions, but that was a terrible, terrible.
And here's a prime example of a good use of CG. When they had the Imperial base on Endor, and they show the AT-ATs walking around and all that stuff, it looked good. It added to what was there. It wasn't needless crap.
You should watch that South Park.
I think I just might.
Well, they
make a good point.
They make an excellent point because without getting into it, really, the gist of it is that Lucas and Spielberg, for reasons that are very funny, end up remaking Raiders of the Lost Ark. Right. They make a special edition, and in the opening scene, you actually have Ewoks running around while Indiana Jones is in that temple. And it's so funny because it's so plausible the way they present it.
It's awesome. And it's
an excellent point. It's one thing to clean up. Like, I really liked what Francis Ford Coppola did with Apocalypse Now redo. I thought that was really good. It's not the same movie, and I think the original version is better, but I liked what he did to clean up his movie and add a sequence that he thought really added a lot to his movie. But at the same time, the original is still a masterpiece. And that's the thing that, you know, with Lucas, you get the sense that he just really was so unhappy with it all this time.
Yes. There's one scene that I wish they would have put in. I've seen part of the footage that was shot. On Hoth, what's the abominable snowman creature called?
The Wampa.
There is a scene, essentially, in the original script where they captured a Wampa. And when the Imperial troops are coming in, there's a scene that was shot. I've seen the footage once where C-3PO rips this sign off of a door. And it's essentially saying, there's a Wampa in here. You come in here, you're going to get killed. And in the script, a bunch of the stormtroopers are supposed to open the door, and this Wampa just beats the ever-loving crap out of them and eats them. That would have been cool. I mean, if you're going to...
Yeah, they've got the footage. I've seen it online, and also in the teaser trailer for Empire, it's still there.
That's right. Yes, yeah, that's where it was pulled from.
But yeah, it's, but you know what? Maybe Lucas thought, well, you know, Greedo, the whole thing with Greedo was a disaster. We certainly can't make C-3PO seem bloodthirsty. So
that would have been funny. Okay, so do we want to discuss Raiders at all or Indiana Jones?
Star Wars.
You know, we're actually going long. Should we? This is mostly based around Star Wars.
Well, no, you know what? Lucas's career is mostly based upon Star Wars, so this is perfect. So
okay,
I like and dislike the prequels.
Let's take it movie by movie because we'll defend Sith to a fault, I will not defend Phantom Menace that much. I think
there are portions could have been done better.
Yes,
the political intrigue, had it been done better, would have stuck with me better.
That would have been really great.
I admired the fact that he wanted to bring that in there.
Yeah,
just didn't execute it well at all.
Yeah,
the pod race though. I mean,
the pod race sequence was amazing.
The action
to watch.
Sequences are fantastic. The
fight with Darth Maul at the end
is great.
I mean, you know, that was very well
even
done.
Even seeing Obi-Wan is like a Padawan. No, nothing.
We're going to get back to Obi-Wan, specifically Anakin, here in a minute.
Okay.
Because we've got the special editions of the special editions to talk about, too. But I figured we better talk about that after.
That's right. All right, we got to fly through these.
One thing at a time.
Okay.
There were portions of it I liked. Ewan McGregor brought a lot of legitimacy to it. You know, that was one thing that they did very right.
Yes.
Even though I've seen interviews, you know, talking about, what do you think? He's like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. You know. The pod race was amazing.
Yeah.
The fight with Darth Maul was amazing. Little Anakin flying a spaceship into the middle of a Star Destroyer going, yippee! I was ready to gouge my eyes out. And do we really need to bring up the big one?
No, we really don't. I don't even want to say his name.
Okay. All I can say is Jar Jar Binks makes the Ewoks look like f***ing Shaft. Quote spaced. Sorry, it was there.
Well done.
There's so much.
You know, it's funny too because
What an acting!
It's a mixed bag at very best because I think Liam Neeson also brings a lot of integrity to his role,
absolutely.
But it's not a great performance. And you know, but the thing is, the script is so problematic in terms of dialogue. Because you're right, because the political intrigue is interesting, but
could have been.
But had they cast, you know, because apparently he even auditioned for it. Had they cast Haley Joel Osment as Anakin Skywalker, I don't know if that would have made the movie better because he still had to say yippee and, yes, and be this cornball kid instead of like, and you know what, honestly, we were looking for a lot in that character. We wanted to look at this kid and go, oh, there's little hints of the evil that's coming. And yes, instead he's this precocious kid. And that's not what, certainly not what I had in mind for little Darth Vader.
And do we need to bring up, you know, you want to talk about, you know, being non-PC with Tropic Thunder. Now, do we really want to bring that up for a...
We could. We might as well. I mean, you know, Ahmed Best, like, whatever happened to that guy, for starters. And, yeah, just...
And you had the whatever lizard creatures at the opening of the movie that's like this riff on the Japanese culture.
Oh, gosh, that was awful.
That's what I'm bringing up specifically.
Asian stereotypes are terrible. And they're like little modern touches. Like, at the pod race, as much as I love that sequence, having the two-headed, the announcers, those guys, like, there are all these modern like jokes in there that are so stupid.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, So Phantom Menace, I think at best is uneven, and the action sequences salvage it and make it feel like a real Star Wars movie at times.
Yeah. Yes, they do.
I hate Attack of the Clones.
You hate Attack of the Clones?
Through a field of flowers. That's all I need to say.
The love story angle is terrible. I love the battle in the arena at the end. I think it's one of the best action sequences in the whole... No, I'm alone. No.
It was entertaining. It absolutely was entertaining, but the rest of the movie took me so out of it. I just, you know, you had to bring that up for me to remember that there's something positive in Attack of the Clones.
Okay, well, let me try. Jango Fett versus Obi-Wan, that sequence? You didn't like that action sequence?
I didn't care.
What was the point?
By the time I got there.
What's the point of any of this? It was cool. You didn't like that scene at all?
I really didn't. Not so much. I liked it when I was playing Lego Star Wars, I guess. But Lego Star Wars is a better is better than the prequel trilogy.
Okay.
I will say that forever.
Despite his name, which is one of the worst names in all of moviedom, did you like Christopher Lee's performance? I did. As a Dooku.
Count Dooku.
Terrible name, but I liked what he brought to that movie.
It was trying to bring legitimacy, but it was just so stupid all around him. It was like he was trying to take it seriously. He was doing his best, but it's like, you know, there's only so much I can do with this.
Dooku.
No, it almost counts as out the performance.
And you bring it, and here's the thing. What's the first thing I think when you bring out Count Dooku? I don't think of Christopher Lee. I think Frogger Yoda.
Mm. But I like Frogger Yoda. You didn't like that fight scene at all?
No.
Christopher Lee versus Yoda? I thought it was a cool scene.
I liked the fact that he finished whooping his behind and then went back to walking with
the cane.
This
is why I hated.
That touch, I loved.
Yeah.
I hated episode 2 because Spider-Man opened like a week before that.
It did.
And... it's so much better than that.
Well, it made more money than that.
Well, thank God.
Yeah, Spider-Man, I think it was top grossing film of the year, if I'm not mistaken. Star Wars did like 300... That Attack of the Clones did 300 million, which was really underperforming for Star Wars.
Yeah.
So,
can't imagine why.
Imagine that. No, all right, let's move on to Mr. Sith.
I like the Sith.
I like it
too. Revenge of the Sith has the most emotionally stirring sequence of the entire prequel trilogy, and it's when no one's talking. It's when you have Natalie Portman and Anakin, Hayden Christensen, standing on balconies looking longingly into the world at each other for each other. That was the most emotionally stirring point of the entire freaking movie.
It's a good moment.
I like the Sith.
Thank you for bringing it up.
I like the Sith.
Grievous was a complete waste.
No.
A complete waste. I'm going to be the most badass villain ever, but I'm never going to show it. Ever.
He was bad. He drove that little thing. Like the round
thing.
Thank
you. You just proven my point. And the annoying...
I thought it was badass.
What about the creature that Obi-Wan was riding around with, like every 3 seconds?
I like that.
Dear God. That's pretty close. The creature he's riding around on. Oh.
He gets on like a iguana and rides around on it. It's like, oh!
Was that like 2 seconds in the movie?
No,
I don't remember that.
No,
it's on when Obi-Wan goes to the planet with Grievous.
Yeah,
It's like
that big iguana thing.
Yeah.
That bugged you.
It itself, it was the thing going like all the time. I'm like, my eardrums are starting to hurt.
Okay.
Well, yes.
All right. Well, but you didn't see that until on DVD. Like, you didn't see the Sith on DVD, did you? Or in theaters, right? You didn't go.
Do we want to go into this real quick?
Yes.
I saw episode one of I saw Star Wars episode 1 4 times in the theater trying to lock it. I camped out the week before it came out to get tickets up in Denver to see it on the 70 millimeter screen on the biggest screen in the state with a brand spanking new Dolby Digital sound surround sound. And then that night my girlfriend at the time was like, hey, let's go see Star Wars tonight. And I'm like, there's no way we're going to get in anywhere. Walked into a theater like 20 minutes before it came out. Oh, the theater's empty. I'm like, why did I waste my time going up?
How long did you camp out? Do you remember?
We camped out overnight. We got it there like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Wow.
The day before.
Yeah.
And it was a kind of a fun thing because it was this big Star Wars celebration.
Yeah.
And then episode 2 I watched on DVD. And episode 3 I saw on bootleg.
Okay.
All right.
I saw all 3 in theaters.
Likewise.
That just shows my degradation of anticipation. It was still a disappointment.
And then you make your point very well. That because there were those who camped out for all of them, which I thought was kind of puzzling. Because for a while, the joke was that episode 2 was going to be called Jar Jar's Great Adventure. That was a joke, but people were still like, well, you know, they got so burnt by the first one, they weren't going to camp out again. But a lot of people did still camp out. I never did. But okay.
There was a friendship between Anakin and Obi-Wan in the third movie. Sure would have been nice if they developed that somewhere else in the movie, because suddenly it's, I don't like you, I don't like you. Hey, we're hanging out and we're great friends killing people. Really?
But he's a stupid, petulant kid. He's in love he's in love with his girlfriend who he knocked up.
From episode 2 to episode 3.
Episode 2, it was, again, the petulance, because he's like this arrogant, cocky jerk of a guy.
But it's like out of nowhere, Obi-Wan's cool with it all of a sudden, and hey, we're hanging out and we're friends.
Because I think he had the obligation to train him, even though he was such a problematic student. Again, I'm trying to defend it. Yeah, I swear. I got the horns. Yes. I'm the devil's advocate.
Oh, wait. And who knew you could block force lightning with a lightsaber? Someone should have told Luke that.
Hmm. That would have been very helpful.
Just saying.
Yeah.
And apparently using force lightning makes you really old really fast.
That was Lucas's way of explaining this is how he became old. My favorite scene, let me just throw this
I'm
out.
Sorry,
my,
I'm just, I'm, no, no, I'm loaded for Barry.
You're making good points. Oh, no, you're making very good points, Dave. My favorite scene in Sith, and for me, it almost redeems the whole movie, and it makes you remember that these movies could actually have good acting in them, and that the good acting, and the, actually, amazingly, the good writing could actually counterbalance the vision, because really, these movies are all about vision over everything else. The scene, the opera sequence, where the Emperor basically verbally seduces Luke into ultimately joining him. I love that scene. And because I think in that scene, it's like Hayden all of a sudden really dials it down for once because he's not trying so hard. And Ian McDiarmid, I think his performance in Sith is the best in that entire movie. I think he's so good in that film. And to me, that scene, like, it works in such a creepy and interesting way that the rest of the movie doesn't even come close. But for me, it redeems the movie. The way that the pod race, redeems Phantom in some ways. Yeah.
The way I saw that scene, I agree, it was a very well done scene. And it was an attempted seduction, but at the same time, it was still showing he was the Emperor or whatever the hell his title was at the time.
Yeah,
wasn't representing it as a diametrically opposed viewpoint of the Force to what he was already going through. He'd been steeped in this version of the Force and what is life, you know, giving life, treasuring life, all this stuff. And then in 3 seconds, he's like, "I'm off to go kill all the Jedi children! Yay!" There was the power. The way I saw it was the power intrigued Anakin to a point, but there was never really any persuasion. If that makes any sense,
it does.
And when you see him, you know, I guess spoiler alert: if you haven't seen the movie by now, whatever. When he kills Mace Windu,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's brutal the way he kills him. Suddenly, like, okay, I'm going to submit to your will. And I, what?
No, a lot of fans have made that point. It did seem like a very quick, hasty decision.
Well, but you also brought up the point of, you know, the Emperor, you know, tried to seduce him.
Yeah.
And I just didn't buy it as a full-on seduction. A lot of people who say, I just hate how quickly he turned. I can see that point of view for you. I just didn't buy it.
I like it because this is his only out. He's absolutely screwed. He's cornered. His girlfriend is pregnant. He's really not what anybody, especially his best friend, Obi-Wan Kenobi, wants him to be. And he has got nothing to go on except when the Emperor gives him this out and says, hey, you know, if you join the dark side, you can outlive death. There is an answer to death. Your girlfriend will not die. You two will end up okay. And because he's a stupid, petulant, horny teenager, he takes it as an out. And I found that to be, well, credible in a way that, like, almost like a Shakespearean drama is. It's like, you know, they're all motivated by very base things. It's not really logic.
Isn't Anakin a Jedi by the time Episode 3 comes around?
Arguably, because in theory he is, but really emotionally he's a player. He's acting.
Oh, I forgot my huge point.
Here we go.
Yes, I totally spaced this.
Here we go.
Honestly, I've let go of Star Wars for the most part.
Okay.
Every time something new comes out, and people are like, "This is the best thing ever!" Like the geek rage begins.
Yeah.
The Jedi Council are a bunch of morons. Okay, the Jedi Council's all good guys, right? There's right. nothing but good guys.
Right.
He's the one who's going to bring balance to the Force. Did it not cross your mind he might become a bad guy? Because everyone's shocked when this happens. Balance means there's stuff on both sides.
You're right, and they never send Senator Palpatine. You know, that always was kind of weird to me, because even when he pops up in The Phantom Menace, it's like there's something shady about this guy, and they're never onto that. That always, like, wouldn't they feel it? Wouldn't they feel that he's a poser?
You'd think.
Yeah, that always kind of puzzled me, too, to tell you the truth.
I mean, that's not puzzling. That's a gaping plot hole.
Because it's one thing, like, again, I use the Shakespearean reference. It's one thing, like Julius Caesar, where a guy is pretending to be good, but he's really bad. It's another thing where these people have the power to detect the evil that is there under the surface.
And I'm not even getting into the midichlorian BS.
I'm at loss for words. You guys are...
I know this is like full on fanboy.
This is just a healthy debate. And,
but
yes, and, you
but
know,
I like the prequels. I will sit down and I will watch.
But you won't watch the second one though. You won't watch episode two.
No,
okay.
No.
But that's the thing. You know, after this, we're still going to talk. A lot of the debate about this
is a friendly debate.
Yeah. A lot of the debate behind this has turned into such geek rage. It's you're an effing idiot. I'm never talking to you again. I'd like to think that the geek community has grown up past that, but there's still evidence to the contrary.
Well, geek indicates that someone is nerdy and, you know, to use the cliche, smart and intelligent. I don't think geek rage is kind of an oxymoron, because we should be above, you know, well, you're effing stupid because Yoda's pixelated. You know, I think we can talk about this stuff. So,
and you know, I honestly, it's been so long since I've seen them. Mm-hmm. I just keep forgetting how many inconsistencies there are put in this trilogy for no good reason.
Yeah.
They put in things that totally screw up things in the future for the original trilogy, and there's no point behind it.
Well, you know, talking with you, Dave, about the prequels, really, it's kind of depressing because honestly, you're making so many good points, Dave. And the midichlorian, for me, that's a deal killer for me because on one hand, you know, let's just go with it for a second. Interesting idea. Anakin was immaculately conceived. Okay. What about it? Nothing. It's like they throw out this whopper of a plot twist, and they don't do anything with it. It's one thing if, I don't know, I mean, forgive me for going this direction, if they go like, what a Jesus metaphor or something, but nothing. They do nothing with that. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make any sense at all. And saying like the Force is like a chemical imbalance or that it's like, you know, like having like having a disease or something.
Well, and really, they set up Vader, Anakin, to be pretty much a moron. Because I think he was there for most of what happened.
Yeah,
and then at the end when he gets turned into Vader, it's like, well, I'm going to tell you what happened, and it's completely contrary to what actually happened that you were there to witness.
I think
no,
I don't mind that Vader is never remotely. I mean, I think we want to. Let me just go in this direction for a second. I think we want to make him a hero because he's so freaking cool, and he's like one of the great movie villains of all time.
I'd love for him to be, but he's a big coward.
I don't mind that he is not remotely heroic or even likable in the prequels, but I don't like that, to say the least. And I'm very being nice here. That Christensen's performance is disappointing, and it's completely inconsistent. I thought there were parts in especially Clones where he was very strong, and there are parts where he was laughably bad. And the same thing for Sith. There are parts where I thought he's really getting this. He's really getting the idea of this guy who's completely torn and completely falling apart. And there are times where it's like this is bad high school theater.
But and you know, I'm a big enough critic of Hayden Christensen, but. The same time, when you get that bad of a performance out of Natalie Portman,
Yeah.
How much the blame goes to George Lucas.
And you do got to go with the screenplay. Because even Hayden, like I've talked about this, like Shattered Glass and Life as a House, great performances by Hayden Christensen. And yet in a movie that also had a really bad script but great effects, Jumper, it just shows that he's just, if the material is bad, he's going to go down with the ship.
Absolutely. Now, shall I get onto my last bit with the special editions?
Let's do it.
I owned the original trilogy on VHS. Mm-hmm. I do not own the prequel trilogy, and I refuse to ever own the original trilogy until the original theatrical cuts were available. And then you got the special edition, where at the end, for some inexplicable reason, they put Hayden Christensen in at the end of Return of the Jedi. For no reason. People try to put logic behind this. You know, well, that's what he was when he was still good. No. He turned back to good before he died. So why couldn't he be an older person like Alec Guinness? Now, had they put in, you know, Ewan McGregor, who I love as an actor, I would have been even more upset. But that just, it's a pointless thing that is, again, it's taking a giant dump over what he'd already done that made him the man he is, that made him the power player he is, that made him all the freaking money he has, and crapping all over it.
Oh, you're talking about Lucas. I thought you were talking about Anakin.
No. His treatment of Anakin.
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense, because it doesn't make any sense for him to be glowing ghost Hayden Christensen. The last time Vader was alive, he was this old man.
Also turned back to the light side.
And he found humanity. Right. The fact that he's Hayden again is creepy. It's not only not wrong, but it's creepy to see him there. It feels wrong.
Yes.
And it makes no sense in the logic of how the ghost Jedi thing works.
So, yes, and I don't know, do we really need to talk anymore? Because,
well,
I'm pretty well done.
What Lucas did that I liked, because it's almost like this is a stubbornness to him that is so annoying that he's been like, well, the original films are flawed and they're not the films I intended. But he did reluctantly release a DVD with the originals and the special edition, which I appreciate from my standpoint as someone who can teach this stuff, where we can look at it and say, you know, this is what worked the first time versus what he did the second time. And I think it's interesting. I give a director any, you know, if he feels that, you know, a film is a canvas and he has a chance to go back and fix and rework it, great. But it's another thing to do what Lucas did, which is, to say the least, very problematic, especially for people who love his stuff.
Thank you for bringing this up. You made me remember something else.
Okay.
He took a big dump over everything.
Well, I was actually going to be in reference to the original theatrical cuts that he finally got around to releasing. There's a 7.1 surround sound mix of all three films. Mm-hmm. Didn't put it on there. Basic stereo crap, which as a fan, it's like, I'm going to give it to you, but I'm going to give it to you on my terms because I hate this crap. Because there was an LA Film Society that was going to show the original print of Star Wars, and Lucas came down and forced them to not do it. I mean, he has an animosity towards these films that I just don't understand. And they didn't do it. How tough would it have been to put a better transfer on there than what there was? From what I understand, the laser discs look better than what we got on DVD. I mean, it's just this. It's I'm giving it to you, but I'm still going to find a way to slap you in the face if you like this stuff. And that's why I don't like Lucas. If you want to do your vision, you know, that's fine. You know, do what you want to do and give me this original stuff. But I mean, it's like it's if you talk to him, you'd think the original trilogy had flopped the way he treats it.
Yeah.
And there it is.
And for a man who has, you know, honestly, whether it's just the sound bites we get from him, I mean, honestly, because like I don't know what's really going on with this guy, but I don't know if it's just the sound bites or if he genuinely has animosity for the original films. Why is he still going with Star Wars? We've seen from his first two movies that he is a very talented director. He can do all this stuff. Why hasn't he directed anything else? Why hasn't he gone off in a different direction? Surely.
Like he keeps talking about he has all these ideas.
Right, but surely Star Wars can't be the pinnacle of it. I mean, I know like he didn't direct Radioland Murders because for years he had planned to. I mean, why doesn't he try to direct something else?
And it's not like he doesn't have the money to finance his own stuff.
He can make the whole prequel and Star Wars trilogy all over again on his dime and still have enough money to travel around the world 5 times.
Live the rest of his life on a cruise ship, for crying out loud.
At the very least. From all the monies he's made from the lunch boxes alone, the guy is doing just fine.
So do you have anything else you want to add, Josh, or are you pretty much done?
No.
I think the court is adjourned. I think Dave has made an excellent case, and it's even made me rethink my case.
I just want to go see Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
There you go. At the end, if you love Star Wars, if you tell me you love Star Wars, the prequel trilogy, well, I may sigh or something, but I'm not going to go off like a lot of people do. I respect that decision. I've laid out why I don't agree, and you've laid out why you guys like it. And, you know, I respect that. I don't agree, but I still respect it.
Likewise. And I appreciate your opinion, Dave. And likewise, it's really made me rethink my opinion. And yeah, I'd love to hear what our listeners say about this talk.
Yes, I'm really curious to see if I'm going to try to get the forums up this week because of this.
They're what? Really making The Road into a movie?
Yeah.
Actually read that book.
Pretty depressing, huh?
Yeah, why?
You're going through Entertainment Weekly. See, we're past news, sir.
sorry. Charlize Theron, isn't it?
Wow, we've moved past.
I think Josh got bored with this.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Wow. It's okay. All right, let's go ahead and talk about what's hitting theaters this coming weekend, and we can move on from there.
Okay. Speaking of remakes we hate, from a director I really don't like, Paul W.S. Anderson, remake of Death Race. Which
changes the entire plot of the movie.
Watch the original. Please.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's so good.
It's such a subversive movie.
It's so fun.
Shoot, I can't read my handwriting. What is that? House. Is it House? No, what is that?
Hang on, I'm pulling it up.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'll move on. Long Shots is coming on. Long Shots is also opening up. I believe that's with Ice Cube is starring in it, and Fred Durst is directing it.
Wow. Because when Durst? I think of quality movies...
No. It's House Bunny. I'm sorry. House Bunny. Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah, House Bunny with Anna Faris, which could go either way.
Yeah.
Long Shots. Yeah, Ice Cube starring in it, and Fred Durst... Who did it all for The Nookie. He's directing it, amazingly so. The Rocker is opening on Wednesday.
Which we have Nate's review up.
And we've heard nothing but negative things about it, so you might want to wait on that one. And then Hamlet 2, which I've heard very good things about. Starring Steve Coogan, that's also opening.
So
there's that.
Let's go to DVDs, because I really want to see Hamlet 2 of all of them that are...
I'm very curious about Hamlet 2, yeah. DVD next week, you got Heroes Season 2, Electric Boogaloo.
You hear everyone say that, this deserves it.
Yes. Nightmare Before Christmas, amazingly, back on DVD after being out of print for a while.
Thank you.
Ultimate Collector's Edition and the 2-disc Collector's Edition.
Now, Josh has seen the pictures of the Ultimate Collector's Edition.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually like a bust of Jack Skellington. And you can actually put the Santa hat and beard on him, too.
That's cool.
Along with the 2-disc. Yeah.
Neat.
I'm not a big fan of the movie, but that's a cool set. I'll even admit that.
You don't like the movie?
You don't remember my review, do you?
No.
When I saw it in 3D? I'm just not a... No.
I'm sorry. I grew up with that movie.
Exactly. That's cool. I've just become not much of a Tim Burton fan overall.
That'll be another episode.
Yeah.
The people versus Tim Burton.
That's one I'm sure I'll lose, but the opinion
will
change.
Versus me.
Yeah.
Pier Pasolini's La Salo is back on Criterion. That's one of the first Criterions that went out of print.
It was going for hundreds of dollars on eBay.
This is one of these movies, like, it's almost like I dare you to see this movie, but really, yeah.
I can see a point behind seeing Cannibal Holocaust. Hearing what I've heard about Salo, I see absolutely no reason to watch it.
In terms of why it was made and what it's supposed to stand for, yeah, it's pretty profound stuff. In terms of what it is, which is basically a group of people being tortured...
being forced to eat feces and
raped beyond all recognition for a very long amount.
What movie is this?
Oh, got your attention now, Josh.
Yeah, wait. Sorry, I stopped.
I actually think Josh should maybe rent this.
Yeah, what is this?
This is a film that came out. It's Pier Pasolini, an Italian guy. He wanted to make a movie about the way the government was treating its people, and he did it like almost to say, like, this is the way the government's treating America. This is how he did it. He did a film about which these villagers are taken prisoner by the government and tortures them for the entire movie. They are forced to eat their own feces. They are forced to rape each other. They are forced to do all sorts of degrading and disgusting acts. And the movie gets worse and worse as it progresses.
It's like Pink Flamingo.
Well, Pasolini is a much better director, but this film is still one of the most controversial films of all time, because in terms of what it's supposed to stand for, it's fairly profound. In terms of like what this government, what this fascist, awful government has done to its people, but on the other hand, it's almost unwatchable, if completely unwatchable.
Well, I could
like torture porn. This is the original, and like, nothing will ever top it.
Yeah,
from what I've read.
Sure. All right, so that's there's that.
Okay.
Criterion 2-disc edition.
Got it.
In a not so deep film, What Happens in Vegas, starring Cameron Diaz and Ashton Kutcher. I saw this film. Not good. Not a good film. Interesting. This is like the first summer movie that's out on DVD now.
Can't imagine why.
Imagine that. Red Belt, great movie, MMA film. David Mamet with
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yeah, great film. Terry Pratchett's Discworld collection.
Yeah, this is too... Okay, I wanted to bring this up because I made you put it on the list because The Hogfather's come out and it's good. Did you see it yet?
Not yet. My copy's at the library waiting for me as you speak. Yep.
It is an amazing good film. From what I understand, Steph has seen these. Lord of the Rings animated. That level of bad.
Ooh.
So, yes. But Christopher Lee does the voice of Death, which apparently is great.
Hmm.
So, but I don't think that's enough reason to actually buy it.
So, for curiosity's sake, you think we're seeing?
Maybe rent it.
Okay.
Maybe, but don't expect much.
Okay.
At all.
A special edition for a friend of Dave's, Brotherhood of the Wolf, director's cut.
Mike over at Control Freaks Radio, it's his favorite movie of all time. Actually, he has a copy of Bootleg that's in the game store that if people talk about the worst movie they've ever seen, he gives it to them to take home and watch and then come back and talk to him. That's how much he hates this movie.
Wow. So unrated, is it like more Monica Bellucci?
Hey, I don't know.
That guy directed Silent Hill.
Who did?
Which is really good. The guy that directed the...
Brotherhood of the Wolf?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. And you just said the phrase, worst movie ever made. Speaking of which, Uwe Boll's Postal, rated and unrated, coming out on DVD.
Which I
the kind wait of, is over.
I don't know if I really want to watch this or not. The curiosity factor in me, I've seen everything else he's done except for Blood Rain 2.
Hmm. Well, you know, we watched the opening scene together, and that's...
I'd watch that.
I'm good.
You're good? You don't need any more?
I don't know if I'll see it. You know, because on one hand... I feel, you know, I want to be a completist, especially when I make my 10 worst of the year list, but this is just, it's almost a given.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I'll watch it. Full throttle.
Someone has to. Oh, dude. Okay. All right. Well, if you'd like to email us, please do email us because we want to hear people's civil takes on Star Wars, who you agree with, who you don't agree with, for what reason, whatever. Shoot us an email at podcast@screengeeks.com. You can also email us individually at Barry, Josh, Nate, and Ethan at screengeeks.com. You can also leave us a voicemail if you give us a call at 719-387-1804. And I guess we'll just let this go.
Can I bring up the thing that Ethan brought up?
Oh, yeah, quick? Absolutely. Yes.
Just really quick. I want to address.
We're going to have him on like in the next week or so.
Anyway. Yeah. So let's get this out of the way. Ethan made a comment on me about me on our Screen Geeks blog. To quote him, he said that I crapped on The Dark Knight. And he's pretty disgusted with the way I defend
Is that the one where I was having the conversation with him, too?
I think so. Okay. And I was defending, I don't know how much I was defending, but I was defending Alien Resurrection, which I'll stand by. And I was also defending Maid of Honor, which I will not stand by. Better than I thought it would be, but not a great movie by any means. But, Ethan, I wasn't crapping on Dark Knight, Ethan. I just didn't like it. I think it's too long, and I think the story is too messy. I don't think it's a bad movie. I just don't think it's a great movie. I don't love it the way everyone else does. You know, it's don't hate me, Ethan. Please, Ethan,
lose the hate. Hate solves nothing.
Ethan.
And so now we've had something for everyone to learn.
There you go.
I don't know. Right, until next week. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
Don't see mirrors.
No, sir, I don't like it.